The always-on feature in SQL Server 2012 was a key decider for us.
We used automated load generation to ramp up to 100 times what our current production load is. We can drive it at 1,500 game rounds per second, and we know that it gives us a highly available solution as well.
We're reducing the time of our analysis from weeks and months to now it's only days, empowering users to actually do analysis that they wouldn't have been able to do before.
On the Microsoft side, when it comes to business intelligence and databases, have continued to advance and keep up with the innovations that are happening in big data.
In situations where we require the ability to very rapidly scale up and scale down, the Windows Azure platform is actually particularly good.
The benefits for Microsoft SQL Server 2012 are we can deliver more for less cost. It's a win-win situation.
We know that we are protected for the future using it.
Good morning. Ooh, I like that. My name is Quentin Clark. I'm Corporate Vice President for SQL Server. This morning, I'm going to talk about SQL Server 2012. This is actually the first tech ed where we've been after shipping, whereas the last couple years, we've been talking about a product that's still on the way. And you know, we're pleased to talk about the product because of the tremendous momentum that it's had. In the scant few months since RTM, we've had over, it turns out, 600,000 downloads, late-breaking data out of the system, of the RTM product. People downloading the eval editions, Express, that kind of thing, and using it already in their environments. The analysts have already done ROI reports on the product, and we're already seeing great results from that, almost 200% return investment on basically just upgrading alone certain scenarios. And then you, our constituency, the audience, the developers and IT pros, DBAs, et cetera, that use the product, are already starting to really talk about it out there in the sort of internet sphere. We have a lot of customers that are in production. If you've been with the SQL Server product for many years, you'll know we run very extensive TAP programs. And we have a lot of customers, both traditional customers along the way, but also new corporations that have been starting to take advantage of the new capabilities in SQL Server 2012. The product is huge. I mean, you can imagine a multi-year release of a product the scale of SQL Server with as many years of history as it has and as large a customer base as it has. There's a lot inside. Literally hundreds of features and improvements of all different sort of scales and natures, ranging from the big marquee features we tend to talk about a lot, things like Always On or Power View, which I know you just saw a demo of in the keynote, Satya did. But also there's a bunch of things in the product that aren't of that same marquee, can we talk about all the time, but still end up being tremendously valuable. So there really is something in the product for everybody. One of the favorite things I like to talk about there, to give an example of one of these smaller things, is distributed replay, where you can capture your production workload as your real production systems actually used, and then replay it against test systems, but replay it across many clients to simulate the kinds of concurrency and load that your reality really is. So you can show that the new versions of your application really are ready for the reality that you're going to throw at it. So to talk about the product, I need to focus in a little bit. And so I have these sort of 12 areas that we're going to run through over the next hour. And with these, we'll take a handful of them and talk a little bit about what customers are doing in production today with the product, and then we'll demonstrate the things that they did to get to that value very quickly and easily. So I got about four demos, thank you. I got about four demos and those customer vignettes, and we'll walk through so the product end-to-end over the next hour. So to start, let's talk about performance. And when you think about it, at the heart of any application IT is a business challenge. A business problem needs to be solved. Some value needs to be created. and that the business needs to operate on. And the first question to ask is, well, at what pace does that happen? Right? Does you no good to need to have an hourly report to adjust some business operational practice if you can only produce the report once a month, right? For example. So you have to first sort of look at the performance of the system. In SQL Server 2012, we first took a look at what is happening in reality out there. What are customers doing with the product today? And what is it that they're needing the product to do? So what's pushing the boundaries of performance, and what can we do in the product to move that boundary forward? Across integration services, analysis services, and the database, there is a host of performance improvements, ranging from everything from the ETL work that we do and load performance and those kinds of things, all the way to the scalability of full text indexes, which is another place, again, where we work with customers and found where they're pushing the product and we need to keep ahead. The bigger story here probably is X velocity. The X velocity in memory technology we first introduced as part of SQL Server 2008 R2 and Office 10. It's what's behind PowerPivot. So in PowerPivot, you're able to literally manipulate in real time millions of records in Excel. It's very powerful and transformational in that interactivity you get with data. Well, there's a set of technologies that are at the heart of that we've now taken, set of Columnar index technologies, and we've built them into Analysis Server, and we've built them into the relational database product. Analysis Server, of course, to have your BI solutions then back-ended professionally in IT, and that have that power and performance. And the relational database to take things that are traditionally aggregate and scan kind of queries that are found mostly in star schemas, fact tables, and be able to get that same performance benefits of this Columnar compression approach for performance throughout the product. But talking about one thing, what customers have really done with it, with X Velocity in the 2012 release, to talk about Trend Micro, which is a company in Japan that does analytics on security data to provide their customers products and services that do security threat analysis and protection. And they have these very large scale data warehouse databases. And over a course of a short period of time, they can be analyzing tens of millions of records. Over a couple months, this can be billions of records. And they had challenges in terms of their operational speed, basically, where they were taking a couple days to do the end-to-end kind of analysis that they needed across the hundreds of analysts that they actually serve within their company producing this product. After upgrading to SQL Server 2012, they're able to improve the performance of these queries by factors of up to 10, factors of 2, 5, 10, very common for the patterns that they had that are doing queries against. This isn't just saving operational time and complexity in IT and the curation effort, etc. involved. It's really about agility. They're now starting to ask questions that they were never willing to ask before because of the cost. The query cost of doing those things. Now they're able to stand up into the environment and be able to get at data and ask and explore new questions very, very quickly and easily. So to talk a little bit about how this is actually put together, I'd like to invite Julie Strauss to come up and show us how it's done.
Thank you, Quentin. So let me just go ahead. Give me 1 second. I'll just go and...
Then I push one of these buttons.
Push number two. There you go.
There we go.
Thank you. So very often when you build BI solutions, you want to optimize for performance. Typically, you will build a semantic model where you pull data from multiple tables, add business logic to further enhance the end user experience, and you choose a technology where you can optimize performance. Either that be a in-memory technology, or you build an OLAP solution where you can pre-aggregate the data. Sometimes, however, you may have a requirement to go directly against your data store. You may work with a departmental BI solution where you can't justify building a semantic model, even if we want you to. Or you may have a requirement to have no latency in your report go directly against your live data. Like in this example, where I have an operational report going directly against my database with my retail sales, so that any given point in time, I can execute this report and see my live data. So let's go and have a look and see how the X velocity in memory technology can help me boost the performance. I'll move over here to SQL Server Management Studio, where you see my retail data store. First, I just want to go down here and take a look at my facts table, which is, in this case, my sales table, which is typically the bottleneck when you're trying to process reports over large amounts of data. And if you look in here, not working, you can see that I have more than 27 million rows. That's quite a lot to process a report over. So let's go and see how my performance deals here. So I have a query here that retrieves the exact same data set as you saw in the report that I just showed. So let's have a look and see what time it takes to execute. The reason I want to show it here in Management Studio rather than doing the report is because I want to show the report execution before and after applying the index. And by executing in here at Management Studio, I can make sure there's no application caching, et cetera, disturbing my numbers. So if you look down here, that was 15 seconds. That's actually pretty good for processing almost 30 million rows. But this is just an example. You can obviously have much larger data volumes where the performance becomes more critical. So now what I'll have to go do is apply a new column store index. I choose a new index, choose non-clustered column store index, and I'll go here and add it, select all columns, for the simplicity of the demo, and say OK. Now, typically what happens in a relational store is that we group and store on a row level, whereas in a column store index, as the name indicates, we group and store on columns. And the differentiation here is the uniqueness of the data. If you look at transaction row, you have the transaction, you have a customer ID, geography ID, product ID. There's not a lot of, it's very unique, so you can't do a lot of compression. When you look at a column store, here when I have almost 30 million rows and look at the column, you don't have 30 million different customer IDs or 30 million different product IDs. So there's much more room for compression, which is really what allows me to boost the performance. Now this takes a little while to execute, a couple of minutes. It's really not a big deal. It's a one-time operation, which really benefits every single user processing the report moving forward. But to before Quentin kicks me off the stage, I have prepared another database here, just another instance, where I have already applied a column store index right there. So let's go ahead, execute the exact same query, and see how that goes. Voila. If you're not impressed right now, it's because you haven't realized it's already done. So thank you. So here we move from 15 seconds for a single report, exact same report, applying the column store index, moving it down to less than 1 second. So that's the power of X velocity.
Thanks, Joe. There we go. So performance, key, right? Key to the foundation of your business requirements. The other thing that's key is today's reality of regulation and certification and these kinds of things, and what that means to the security of your environment as well. Here in SQL Server 2012, we've made efforts to improve our security infrastructure around those scenarios. This largely lands in user-defined roles, where you set the granularity of the kinds of operations to separate duties between your app owners and your DBAs and your system administrators that allow you to adhere to the kinds of policies that are now required. And we've also done work in auditing. We started that work in SQL Server 2008 with new infrastructure to provide better agility and performance in auditing. And we've expanded on that to keen in on the kinds of audits that are really needed to maintain the right kinds of compliance, and then the right kinds of usability in terms of filtering and accessibility to the data, so at any given time you know where you stand and can very quickly get down to root cause and analysis of where you are. So performance and security taken care of, the next need you turn to is ensuring availability, business continuity. Getting to the required number of nines in terms of availability and availability management and protection for your data is obviously super foundational to running a business and any application that becomes business critical, mission critical. One of the things we've done in 2012 is building integration services as a server. up until the 2012 release, SSIS was more of a developer kit, and very powerful in terms of the kinds of ETL and ELT and all the stuff you could do to integrate and bring data together and shape it into the right forms. But getting that final mile of HA done and making sure that the data flows you have are sort of enterprise-grade reliable. In SSIS 2012, we've done the work to make sure that's a server and can benefit from the kinds of HA management you know how to do for servers today. Another thing we focused on is Stream Insight. In 2008 R2, we announced and released SQL Server Stream Insight, which is a real-time relational continuous event processing engine. We actually have the very diverse set of industries now using this, everything from Formula One racing to high finance, because what it allows you to do is look at ingress of streams of data and perform time series kinds of relational queries over data that's coming by. That data can be in motion in real time, or can you actually be doing time series analysis on data that's at rest. But that scenario, once it gets integrated into business process and becomes part of a mission-critical workflow of data, needs HA as well. And in the 2012 release, we built HA infrastructure for Stream Insight. And finally, SQL Server Always On. It was a reimagination of the availability management capabilities for the relational database itself in SQL Server 2012. And here we start from the standpoint of what are the axes of agility that our customers really need. Many different secondaries, readable versus non-readable secondaries, synchronous versus asynchronous capabilities for those, better client management so that the failovers are transparent, are all key factors that we took into account as we developed the SQL Server Always-On technology. So you have the right kinds of agility around local, regional, and geo HA scenarios. The city of Virginia Beach, which has actually been accolade as one of the best managed town governments in the country, is an IT department that took on Always On very early and is in production on it today. And interestingly, they had a high availability solution actually in Oracle Rack, but it didn't meet their requirements. The effort necessary for them to get to the level of agility and reducing the maintenance windows necessary was too costly, too complex. They had a large number of services support in their IT department, which is actually quite small, and they did not have the kind of ease of stamped environments and managing their availabilities as they needed. So moving to SQL Server 2012 and deploying with Always On, they're able to cut their maintenance windows, in fact, dramatically remove them altogether for certain kinds of expected downtime or planned downtime for maintenance, and improve the satisfaction in the ongoing 24/7 operations that a modern city really is. Meets the required nines, and it, more importantly, it frees IT up to go work on things that are more value add. And they saved a bunch of money moving away from competing products. So to show how that's configured and done, and talk a little bit about that, I'd like to invite up Luis Vargas to come up and show us what it's all about.
Thank you, Brendan.
Hello.
Excellent.
Let me get this closer. Hello? Okay. Let me change that to 4, 3. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. So in the next 7 minutes, I will show you how different capabilities of SQL Server Always On work together in order to provide a high availability solution that is reliable, integrated, and cost-effective. So in the screen, you can see that I have pre-created an always-on availability group. An availability group is a new high availability solution that we have in SQL Server 2012 for groups of databases. This availability group has a name, AG1. It has 4 replicas, 1 primary, server 2 that I'm currently connected to, and 3 secondaries, server 3, server 4, and server 5. Having all these multiple secondaries ensures high redundancy in the system and therefore high resiliency to failures. Now, in the availability group, I have 2 databases, AdventureWorks DW and AdventureWorks Ref. These are the databases that my applications depend on, right? These are the mission-critical databases that I need to keep high available at all times. And by keeping this as part of an availability group, that's what I get. Finally, I have an availability group listener. This is a very, very, very cool concept. So the listener is a DNS name that all applications can now use to transparently connect to the primary, irrespectively of the topology of my high availability configuration or where the primary lives. Now, availability groups is a very integrated solution. It's very easy for me to look at the health of my high availability environment. All I have to do is say show dashboard. And in a single page, I can monitor very quickly the health of my availability group. In this case, I can see that my availability group is healthy. And it is healthy because all the replicas in the system are healthy. And each of these replicas are healthy because the copies of the databases that these replicas host are also healthy. Right? So very simply, I can look at the status of my distributed high availability environment. Now, also, given that it's an integrated solution, I can very quickly go and change the configuration of my high availability environment. All I have to do is right-click in the availability group and select properties. Now, in the properties, I can look, for example, the different configurations that I have for these replicas. I can see that the primary is configured for manual failover. So this allows me to manually fail over the primary to a secondary before a planned event, for example, an OS upgrade. Or I can change this into an automatic failover mode and select one secondary for automatic failover. By doing this, if there are any issues that impact the availability of my primary, for example, a disk failure or a network failure, the primary will automatically fail over into the secondary. Now, having all these secondaries just waiting for a failover to happen represent wasted resources and therefore a cost for the organization. So with Always On, it's very easy for me now to select a readable secondary and change the readable characteristics of my secondaries. By selecting yes, now I can actually go and start reading into those secondaries. Now this allows me to offload workloads from my primary into all of these secondaries. Isn't that cool? And now, it's pretty cool. Imagine that you have applications that are running far from the primary. You can now have a local copy, a readable secondary, and now you can run all your applications in a co-located copy, right, without the latency. So I'm going to say yes for these changes. And let me show you how this works. So on the screen, I have two tools. The tool on the left generates an OLTP workload, right? It's going to be inserting and updating hundreds of records per second. And the tool in the right is generating a read-only workload, right? It's going to be retrieving hundreds of records per second. So let me show you the connection string for each of these. This is the OLTP tool. You can see that I'm specifying the availability group listener. This is the DNS name that I'll use to connect to it. So when I go and execute this, this will automatically connect to the primary and start running my OLTP workload. You can see that I have more than a million records here, and there is inserting hundreds of records per second. Now, let's look at the connection street for the reporting application. Again, I'm using the availability group listener as before, but I'm specifying a new keyword called application intent. This keyword is set to read only, and by doing this, I'm telling SQL Server I'm interested in running a read only workload. With this, SQL Server will automatically route me to the first readable secondary that is available in the system. So if I execute this, you will see that this will route me to server 3. I believe that's the first one that I defined. And it will start retrieving the read-only workload for them. So you can see now that it's retrieving all those records. So we believe that the availability of your read-only workloads is as important as the availability of your OLTP workloads. So with Always On, if your readable secondary becomes unavailable, we will automatically route you to the next readable secondary that is available in the system. So to prove that, I'm going to connect to server 3, and I'm going to stop the SQL Server service. And you will see that the connection will fail. So you can see the connection has failed to that readable secondary, and the connection has retry logic, so it will automatically try to reconnect using the same availability group listener. I haven't changed anything, right? Same connection string, and after a couple of tries, it will connect to the next readable secondary that is available, and my availability group will ensure that my read-only workload continues. It's not cool. High availability for your read-only workloads as the same as high availability for your OLTP workloads. So if I go back after all this, you can look in the dashboard that there has been an issue here. So the issue is that the validity group is in a critical state, and the reason why it's in a critical state is because I configured it for automatic failover, and my replica that was configured for the target of automatic failover has been down. So I can very quickly see that there is an issue. And also, it tells me which is the replica that has the issue, and if I go there, it will tell me that the replica is disconnected. Now with all this, I can go back to that replica, fix the problem, and continue the availability of my system. So in this demo, you have seen how different capabilities of always-on play together in order to provide you a high availability solution that is reliable, integrated, and cost-effective. Thank you.
Thank you. The right performance for your business, the right security infrastructure, great availability management, all has to be done with flexibility. And one of the things that we're working on is integrating the cloud and Microsoft's cloud offerings into our overall infrastructure to allow you to take advantage of your own terms. One of the things that we shipped with SQL Server 2012 is the ability to stand in SSMS and create backups into the cloud. And it puts them in Azure Blobs, which you can subscribe to in a way that provides geo-redundancy. So with just clicking through the management tools, you're able to actually get a global data availability solution through basically a subscription without deploying your own data centers. That's, you know, key to business continuity. The other thing that we're working on that we're hoping to deliver later this year is support for secondaries in Windows Azure. So you'll be able to go into the same configuration experience that Luis showed you and enroll secondaries in as part of Azure that will be failed over to as well. And again, you'll be able to do geo distribution around that as around that too. And so you'll be able to set up these scenarios where you have data flows and data that's now spanning data centers that we're running on your behalf, but rooted in systems that are primarily being driven out of your on-prem systems. That flexibility and that choice in how to consume the cloud shows up in our work in appliances and how we're generally approaching integrating with the cloud. You heard Satya talk about consistency. Consistency for the programmer, consistency for operations, consistency in the app models and VMs, etc. And SQL Server is no exception to that. You saw earlier today in the portal demonstrations the availability of SQL Server VMs, configured VMs, for infrastructure as a service in Windows Azure. And you can also, you know, run VMs in database consolidation as an appliance, or of course in your own bespoke private clouds. That choice, having the consistency across the cloud, the appliances, the on-prem systems, is key to allowing you to adopt things at the rates and in the ways that you really want to be able to adopt them, and having that choice. Adoption rate leads us to talk about scalability. In SQL Server 2012, one of the significant things we worked on was scalability with the Windows Server Group and with the industry largely to continue the journey on scale-up systems. Our very highest-end enterprise customers' mission-critical systems today tend to run on high-scale SMP systems. And in the 2012 product release, we've continued to ratchet forward the number of cores we support, the memory size we support, and again, in partnership with our Windows Server friends, to continue to provide an environment that allows you to run a business of any size, you know, transactional, data warehouse, et cetera, on the SQL Server platform. The other thing that we're working on, important for scalability, is scale out. And when you look at the way modern applications are built, the applications have been built over the last few years that are at cloud scale. They're built inherently for scale on a new model. SQL Server, Windows Azure SQL Database Federations is a capability that allows you to program to one set of interfaces, and then the scalability of that application becomes a configuration and management operation, not a developer operation. So it literally will allow you to start spanning many, 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 many instances across the SQL Azure system in order to meet your scalability needs. As configuration, not as a developer. That scalability, the availability management, security, performance, all of this does you no good unless you can actually build the solutions. Build them competently, build them quickly. Get to real time to solution. SQL Server Management Studio, in the 2012 release, we've done work across the database and BI to bring back together those experiences into a better integrated whole. We've done work with the Visual Studio team to ensure that we're on the right roadmap for integrated solutions on the modern Visual Studio infrastructure. Yeah, I heard clapping for that. And further, we've made a significant effort in something called SQL Server Data Tools, which is a modernization of the database programmability capabilities in our Visual Studio add-ins. So you get IntelliSense and all the modern constructs you need, including offline compilation, all these things, to really validate the applications you're building, even when you're just working on an isolated developer workstation. That developer meme is super important and extends into, well, what the environments are that we're finding SQL Server now running in. A number of years ago, I started getting calls from customers asking for drivers for Unix. I kind of wasn't expecting the call, to be honest, because a lot of the SQL Server deployments we saw out there were very .NET with SQL Server underneath. But what was happening was people were modernizing old applications that were running on Unix, and they were replacing the database tier first. And they wanted to replace that database tier with SQL Server, where they're moving away from Sybase or IBM or Oracle, it didn't really matter. But they're moving from one platform and institutionally moving to another, and they're starting with the key asset, which of course, in my opinion, always is the data. And they're moving over to SQL Server, and they really want us to build and support drivers ourselves running on Linux. That same thought of SQL Server finding its way to more professionally support an application that's been built in other environments has found its way to our support for Java and JDBC. It's also found its way to PHP. As customers have built solutions around PHP and then they've become important to the business, they've replaced the data tier with SQL Server and moved away from the other offerings that are available there. So they have a better, more professionally managed database in that application. The other aspect that's important to developers, of course, and is modernizing is the kinds of data that you work with. I got about 700 people in this room, roughly. I'll bet there are about 1,000 GPS chips, probably, roughly in that ballpark. Oh, they're all talking to satellites and gathering data, and I don't know what they're doing with it exactly, but they're doing something with it. But why is that? Well, the idea of where in the world something is and something has happened is now becoming core to what businesses are about. And in 2008, we introduced spatial data type support in the database, and we've now been plumbing that through the rest of the stack, including BI, in 2012. And expanding its capabilities even down in the core data types in the engine. That's an example of new kinds of more modern apps, new kinds of data that more modern apps need, and the support we're doing in SQL Server 2012 for that. That extends to an area we call semantic search, which is beyond full text. It can actually look at a corpus of documents and understand the topics that might be involved inside those documents and help you relate and statistically understand the likelihood that things are related. And then completed our integration journey with FileStream into a feature we call FileTable. FileTable is integrated storage. It allows you to put things inside the database that are files surfaced through the shell. I mean, literally the Win32 APIs that you know something like Photoshop uses or Word or Excel, any application that knows how to talk to the file system can now talk to data that's the files that are in under the management of SQL Server. This provides true integration solutions across structured and unstructured data. I have a customer, TradeStation, which is actually a Florida company, they're here, that does offers a service that provides people doing investment the ability to test theories about investment strategies against 30 years of historical data. They really have terabytes of data, and these are in unstructured file formats, and their management of these data files became a significant challenge for them. And it was reducing their agility on a day-to-day basis, and it was costing them quite a bit in terms of their oversight and management. They then moved all this stuff into SQL Server 2012 and are managing it under SQL Server 2012's unstructured data systems. And by building a management solution for files on a relational database, they've been able to take advantage of our partitioning infrastructure, scaling the number of partitions to thousands to help them manage the ongoing rolling windows of what kinds of data is available for what. And then they reduce the amount of mail work that that they had to put in order to manage and curate these files on a day-to-day basis. In the process of doing all this, they're also able to reduce the number of servers that was necessary to manage all these files. So again, they built a file management solution on integrated storage on SQL Server 2012, and were able to build a better app and better accessibility into that and better management for those data sets by using the product. To show a little bit about that and to show the programmability aspects of getting a semantic search, I'd like to invite Michael Reese to come up and show us everything.
So I'm going to show you how very easy it is to build applications using SQL Server 2012, and it's four. Number four. And it's a SQL Server capability with file stream and file table and semantic search so that you can manage the deluge of unstructured data that you're getting and be able to gain valuable insight into the documents that you store inside the context of the database. So what I'm having here is SQL Server Management Studio, and I will show you two features. I will show you file table and semantic search. File table and semantic search together give us this integrated store and capability offering in SQL Server that really makes it very easy to manage your files and documents. When I started setting up my demo here, I created a database which basically creates a file group for my file stream data, very similar to what you did in SQL Server 2008 if you did that. And then I create a table that is a new type of table inside SQL Server, which is a file table. It's actually a very simple statement. I say create table as file table, give the name that will be exposed in NTFS as an NTFS file share, because this table serves a dual purpose. It's both a SQL table with a fixed schema that allows me to run any SQL query I would like to, as well as gives me the ability to expose the content of the table inside an NTFS file share. So let me show you how I expose it through NTFS. I have over here the Windows Explorer, and I go and right-click on the file table name. It has a new option there that says Explore File Table Directory. Let me go and select that. And what it does is it opens the table inside the Explorer window. Now, as you can see, I already pre-populated the table with annual reports, which are annual reports of companies that I'm interested in tracking. But I don't want to just have, like, every quarter or every year some information. So I have contracted my data provider to provide me some financial news here that I'm going to copy over. So I'm just, let me go back up here, and copy the financial data into my table. So as you can see, this is just the drag and drop operation. But what is actually happening behind the scenes is that it actually moves the data into my file table inside the database. So if I go back into the database, let me take a look at what I'm actually now able to do with the data. So what I did was I created a full text index on that table. Now what it does is the table itself, the file table, has one file stream column that contains the data. Now what happens is if I do a full text index on it, it indexes everything. But in addition, I now have the ability to add statistical semantics to the table. Now what this does is it analyzes the documents, and not only does it extract all the keywords, but it also does some linguistic analysis of the data without me having to be a domain expert to tell me what the documents are about. So let's take a look at how that actually works. Let's assume I'm interested in some articles about Nook and Microsoft. And so I'm running a query here over the semantic key phrase table, which is a new table or table valid function that we expose to operate on that semantic information. So in this case, I just query it, and you will notice there are a few documents here, such as, for example, Microsoft buys Nook stake that is going to give me some interesting information. So what I can do now is I can take a look at what are the keywords that are actually being considered to be important for the document. So in this case, I again go back to my semantic key phrase table, but I'm going to pass in the document ID that is related to that document. So what I've done here, I'm an old T-SQL hacker, so I have to apologize for showing T-SQL code, But what I did was I basically created a stored procedure, and now I'm providing the name of the document that my application normally would provide me with as the argument to the stored procedure.
So if I'm building an application, I would just hand, as part of the experience, I let the user select the document, hand that down to the stored
procedure. So think search box, Nook, Microsoft, and then everything behind the covers occurs automatically. So if I execute that, you will notice that the key phrases that it identified are things like Barnes, Noble, Nook, Microsoft, so the things that are actually in the title, but also additional information such as, for example, Android, Amazon's Kindle, etc., so competing information that are also in the document. And I didn't know anything when I added the document or the index. I didn't know about what this corpus is about, so it actually finds it automatically itself, which is pretty cool.
But it did that based on looking at the whole corpus of documents.
Yes. So now let's see. There was one document that was a little bit interesting. So now let's look at what the other documents are that are related to this document. Now for this, I again wrote a stored procedure that uses a different table-valid function called semantic similarity table to give me the information. So if I run this query, you will notice that it finds lots of other documents that are about Barnes & Noble and Microsoft and Nook, etc. But it also finds me one document, which is called Dow S&P 500 Slips as Spain Enters Recession. So what does Spain's recession have to do with Nook and Microsoft? So let's try to figure that one out. And for that, I have my last query, which is basically looking at the details of the relationships between two documents. That's called the semantic similarity details table. Now again, stored procedure, passing in the two arguments, running it, and you will notice that the key phrases are Barnes, Noble, Nook, Microsoft. So they are apparently talking about the same thing. So let's take a closer look at the document. And so for that, I drill into my financial news here, and I enter up here the search term Spain, just to show you here. I hope that Zoomit actually works. Okay. And now I have here two documents. The first one is the one that is interested. So I'm double-clicking on the file that is stored inside the database, and voila, integrated store, it actually opens it in Word, and now I could go and edit it or do whatever I want and save it back. Now, but what I want to do here is just reading it. And so I go through it, and I actually find a whole section here that basically indicates that Spain entered the recession on the day that Microsoft announced the deal with Barnes & Noble on the Nook. So that's why they are related. So I think I've shown you now how easy it is to use the integrated store capabilities in SQL Server 2005 to build really compelling apps. Thank you.
Thank you. It really speaks to opening up new scenarios. Right, the work you see in semantic search, you can start to think through possibilities. Building an application that has document artifacts in it and allowing your application to let users find related documents very easily or click a button and understand how these things may be related. Providing a different kind of insight than what's been traditionally available out of data and inside a database, much less files that are now inside a database. There's other scenarios that are unlocking in the world now, too, which is really around what we sometimes call ambient data, data that's out there. Applications increasingly are no longer just islands of their own data, but they're starting to integrate with the rest of the world's data. Here, Microsoft has been pushing forward and participating in a standardization of something called OData, which has become the de facto way that web properties are exchanging information in a structured way with each other. We have data synchronization, which is a service we're building in Azure, which allows you to build scenarios to synchronize data between on-prem systems through a service or between on-prem and into Azure. This opens up a whole different set of chain of data flow that it opens up a whole new set of scenarios. So too, we're building something called the Windows Azure Marketplace. And it's an environment we're creating to allow people with interesting data to bring it to a marketplace for you to take advantage of it. There's things like address data in there, so you can do data cleansing on address information for your customers. Or there's things in there like like social analytics, so you can understand the relevancy and what's hot and not relative to the product space you're working in. So this notion of using data that's coming from out there is increasing, and Microsoft SQL Server 2012 is a product that's taking advantage of that and offering you those capabilities. The other thing that the internet has taught us about data is that it's getting increasingly useful at larger and larger scales. Companies are realizing the value of keeping lots of information and then going back and doing analytics in ways that they weren't expecting to do at the time they captured the information. And here we have two efforts to deal with data at large scale, and that's across the two major types of data that exist, unstructured data and relationally born or transactionally born structured data. Here we're betting on Hadoop, which is the emerging standard to deal with large sets of unstructured data, and we're building Hadoop in as an Azure service, and we'll eventually, of course, bring it as well into your environments. And we're also continuing our work on Parallel Data Warehouse, which is a product we released a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, to bring half a petabyte size relational data warehouses into your environment through fully managed and built appliances. Something that's tuned end-to-end to meet the needs of those scenarios and that scalability. Of course, having all this data, well-curated, large-scale, secure, great availability, great performance. Having all this data is one thing, but then you need to make sure the data is correct so that you can then serve it out for your business users. Credible, consistent data has been a major effort we've taken on over the last couple releases. In SQL Server 2012, we're completing some work in the BI semantic model to provide a model over data. Your users aren't going to understand how to do a five-way join to get a customer, but if you can build the BI model that understands what a customer is, then you have something of value for your end users. The data itself has to go through a process, an evolution. Master data management allows you to basically pin data sets that need to be referred to and standardized on and managed by IT. In 2012, we've done a great job integrating that whole thing all the way out to an Excel experience for the business user who understands and knows how to curate that specific data set. And we've also done work in data quality services, introducing data quality services as a new capability in SQL Server 2012 to allow you to do data cleansing. And this is a process that learns from what you do and can automate the kinds of data cleansing activities you have, and also talk to the Windows Azure Marketplace to use reference data sets to help you shape the data correctly. All of this data, of course, comes together, has to come together, so they can really be accessible in the right kinds of tools for your end users, for the business users. The users who day-to-day have questions they need answered in order to be able to move the business forward. Our effort around BI and our partnership with Office is all about this. And we've taken an approach of the yin and yang of self-service versus end-user empowerment, self-service end-user empowerment versus IT control. The work we've done to integrate with SharePoint to allow you to administer and understand what models are being used and track that and manage that professionally. And then the technology we have to allow you to bring together data that may have started in Excel, but then professionally bring them in to analysis services, all managed by IT. All of this sets the stage to allow the business user to end up really exploring that data and getting value out of it very, very quickly. In SQL Server 2008 R2 and Office 10, we introduced Power Pivot. And in SQL Server 2012, we introduced Power View. Both of these are designed to reduce the time it takes to go from raw information to real business insights. We've also done work in professional side on reporting to ensure that alerts are also available. So as you gain insights, you can get back to those things very, very, very quickly. We have lots of customers now in production on Power Pivot and Power View, and one of them is LG Chem, which produces petrochemical and electronics and other industrial manufacturing pieces. They have a data warehousing system where they're bringing in all this data, but they have a set of reports that it continually grows, and there's a backlog of work that IT is being asked to do to continue to build more and more and more reports for more different views of information to empower that business process. They really want a solution where they could mix together the ability to professionally curate and manage some data sets, then offer others to allow users to really serve themselves and create their own solutions, and then keep track of what's really being used and what's hot, so they can decide whether or not they need to more professionally manage some of those data sets. To show how that's all done, I'd like to invite Julie back up to go through our great work between SharePoint and SQL BI.
Excellent, thank you. Just give me one second. Can you hear me? Yeah. So as you can hear, we have done a lot of investments in the area of BI, really building on the success of what we delivered within managed self-service BI in the previous release. So some of the investments we have done for this release is allowing IT professionals the capabilities to take some of these managed self-service solutions deployed to SharePoint and seamlessly transition that to be deployed as a corporate BI solution based on analysis services. Along the same lines, we've also added end-user empowerment for allowing business users to do rich visualizations and interactive analysis on top of these semantic models, as I'm sure you saw in the keynote. So I will take you through an end-to-end experience of how this comes together and walk you through the scenarios. I'm going to start here in the management experience because that's really key for the overall experience of managed self-service BI. So here I'm in the Power Pivot Gallery, where you can see some of my users have already uploaded some workbooks. Essentially, behind the scenes, we have analysis services running as a service inside SharePoint. So when an end user uploads a Excel workbook with an embedded data model to the gallery, two things happen. The solution becomes visible to other users who can now further interact with it, either within Excel, thin in Excel services, or by building their own visualization using PowerView. The second thing that happens is once a user interacts with this model, analysis services running in the background grabs that data model, restores it to analysis services, and now it becomes visible to IT. So for those of you in IT, when working in this environment, you will have your very own management dashboard. So in here, you can manage all these solutions that has been deployed to SharePoint. You can see the CPU usage, memory, number of users, where the data is coming from, etc. So you can have oversight of what these end users are doing. So here I'm showing a workbook activity chart where each of these bubbles represent a workbook that you saw in the Power Pivot Gallery. So let me just play this, and you see here the number of queries, the number of users, and then the size of the bubble, which represents the data volume within each solution. So as I play this, you can see how the solutions develop over time. You see some solutions come and go. Those you don't really have to worry about. They're temporary BI solutions, which is really the strength of managed self-service BI because it's so easy to get up and running. So users will build their own solutions for managing various projects. The ones you do want to pay attention to is bubbles like this guy, which happened to boom movie sales. We're obsessed with movie sales in this company. We really like them. So these solutions that start out small and just keep growing, for example, I have a user building a model that I shared with four people, suddenly have 400 people using it. Now it's really time for you to pay attention to that solution and see if you need to take over. There's different ways you can take over. This is some of the investment that we did with this release, that you can simply take this workbook, a copy of the Excel workbook. You can go to Management Studio. Here I have a tabular instance of analysis services. You can simply right-click here. You have your regular restore, where you restore regular analysis services database. And here I can restore from Power Pivot. What this allows me to do is simply point to the Excel file, grab the data model out of the guts of the Excel file, and restore it to analysis services. Now you can go apply row-level security in contrast to the document-level security that you have on the SharePoint deployed solution. So literally, you take a managed self-service solution, deploy it to analysis services in less than 10 minutes. That's pretty, come on, people, that's amazing. Okay, so before, another thing I could do is that is the step I would take if I don't have to add additional semantics to it. But we also introduced a whole new tool set inside Visual Studio, allowing professionals to build the same type of solutions that we allow for Power Pivot, so quick time to solution. And again, I can simply import an Excel workbook and use that as my starting process for deploying a corporate BI solution. But let's see, before I take any action, I just want to open this workbook and see what the users actually did. So here, all the user did, it's actually a simple model. It just have a few tables, seven tables pulling structured data from a relational data warehouse and combining it with box office sales, which happen to be data that I've just copy-pasted in there. Now I could go ahead and all the user have done is pull data together and build a pivot table. What they really have done behind the scenes is that they have built a fully blown semantic model, here represented with our new diagram view available with this release. Now I could go ahead, enhance this model, add much more semantics to it. I can build user-defined hierarchies, KPIs. I can even add some more advanced reporting properties, which will control the end-user experience, optimizing the layout experience for business users when they start interacting with this model using Power View. So let's have a look what that will look like. So I go back to the gallery, where I can start my analysis using Power View right here from the Excel workbook. I've already cheated a little bit, so I'm here already in Power View, ready to go. You see the same tables that I had in the other, in the Excel workbook. Now all I do is I click movies, right? There's lots of fields in here. Some has been pre-selected. Wow, that's magic. That is the settings that allow me to set in the semantic model controlling the end user experience. So somebody have defined for me that these are the key fields. So the title of the movies, the posters, etc. I can obviously I can add and remove from there very easily. One single click and I can change the layout. That looks pretty nice, huh? Magically the titles appear at the top, the posters to the left. It's looking nice. Again, it's controlled by the semantic of the back-end model. Let me just quickly build out this piece of analysis. I want to look at movie ratings as well as number of downloads. Everything is laid out on the surface. There's no differentiation between layout and building the report and laying it out. There's one quick visualization. Let me just add one more data region just to show you the richness of the interactivity. So there you go. Five clicks, I have a pretty good looking report. Now, obviously, I can start interacting with it. Here, one click, you see like everything cross filters. Normally when you build a report, there's a lot of wiring up for the person building the report to make sure the data region cross filters correctly. Here, it's all in the app. It's hard on us, easy on you guys. So now I could keep going, add some more visualizations, but instead of doing that right here, I want to actually take you through what I would do when I'm gonna present these findings to my team, to my manager, who else wanna listen to me. So what I can do, I can go out here and export to PowerPoint. Obviously, I have already prepared that. Let you go. And here I am in PowerPoint, and I can move into view mode if the projector wants to be with me. Now I can say click to interact. What happens behind the scene is we activate that connection, hopefully, eventually, back to my data store. And what I can do now, I have full interactivity in this environment. So I can interact, I can cross-filter, I can play my animations. This is pretty neat. You might have seen flying bubbles before. So you may have seen flying bubbles before, but not inside PowerPoint, right? So we advance all the time. Now, obviously, I can drill through, and I can see the usual avatar effect. So hopefully now you've gotten an idea of all the investments we have done, bringing it all together under one semantic model, start in Excel, transition into Visual Studio and analysis services, and now visualize. Now I'm getting kicked off. Thank you, Quentin.
Thank you, George.
So hopefully over the last hour we've given you an idea of the power and the utility that SQL Server 2012 has been bringing to customers' environments, and how easy it is to gain that value, or to get in, use the product, configure it, and make it do something useful for you across a wide range. There are over 50 sessions here at TechEd for the database and BI. I encourage you to go find them, to trace them down, and go watch them, or go sit in them. There are 20 labs, 3 instructor-led workshops. We've actually made a pretty big investment this year in hands-on teaching, so you can really learn how to do this stuff yourself. And there's also a cloud-ready data services talk I'm giving actually later today in a few hours as the end of the cloud track on today's TechEd Day. So with that, I'd like to thank you very much for coming, and enjoy the rest of TechEd.